Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing? Uneventful, right?
Yeah, really fun week around here. Good stuff. So let's just start there, Charles. The Titans fire Rand Carthon after going 3-14 and securing the number one overall pick. And yet they have retained Chad Brinker, which the way it's been sold to us is those two have basically been in partnership the last year. What do you make of the move, the latest in a series of moves from Amy Adams Strunk?
Well, okay, first and foremost, I mean, I don't doubt the partnership. I want to tread very lightly on this idea that, you know, Brinker knifed Rand Carthon, and I think I can speak to that a little bit, and I think we're going to end up talking about Amy. And I think anytime that you see someone brought in as an assistant GM and then who effectively gets promoted above the guy he came in with, that immediately should raise a red flag of there's an organizational shift there. There's something going on. It wasn't Rand who said, let me promote this guy above me, basically, and turn him into kind of the czar of the operation, right? Operationally, right, from the football side. And, you know, I think I personally should have known it when, you know, I remember last summer I was laying out kind of my training camp tours, and I was talking to another general manager, and I was kind of deliberating between going to the Titans and another team. And, you know, I was talking to this general manager, and he said, well, why, you know, what are you going to do if you go to the Titans? I said, well, I want to get down there and see Rand. You know, I'd spent some time with Rand the year before that. And he was like, well, why aren't you going there to see Chad? And I didn't, you know, I was like, well, I'm not specifically not going there to see Chad, but I thought it was interesting that he brought it up. And I was like, you know, what's your perception of that? And he's like, well, Chad's the guy running the operation now. He's like, don't you want to go see the guy running the operation? And right then I should have been like, okay, like this perception. And it was not, a general manager that I think, you know, it's not like it was somebody who was like tied to Chad. So this is what he's hearing from Chad. Like, it was just in that community, the perception of when Chad Brinker took that position was that there had been a power shift and that Rand's role was, I guess for lack of a better term, going to start to be minimized, or there was going to be a change to exactly what was going to be on Rand's plate. And so you ask, like, why is Chad Brinker still there now? I can answer that actually really easily. NFL owners, particularly ones that are not in the building, and that I'm telling you, everyone who comes out of that organization, give them a long enough timeline, they will tell you Amy is not in the building enough. They will just tell you that. They'll be like, the scariest thing for you in your job in the Titans organization is if you are on a, let's just say, a strata with a number of other, you know, peers, right? And you all kind of have jobs that are considered equal, and it's this, remember, it's the everybody works together culture, right? It's that process. It's everybody's, we're all working on the same thing. We're rowing in the same direction. He said, what's scary is that, you know, if Amy comes through and suddenly you feel like this person is getting additional time with Amy, or there's certain things that Amy starts to lean on this person for, all of a sudden you're like, what's happening? Like, are we losing some order here? And you feel like Amy is starting to basically look at someone and go, this person's more useful than that person. And she's not around every day. So she's not, it's like, how in tune is she to everybody's jobs, everybody's roles, what everybody's doing? You know, I think she can be swayed and moved, as many owners can. And the most influential, and I can tell you this going back to like Mike Tannenbaum, when he was with the Jets and then with the Miami Dolphins, the most influential person in an organization underneath an owner is someone who could do many things. That is very impressive to owners. And Chad Brinker, through no fault of his own, has an extremely wide base of experience. Extremely wide. Like, one of the most varied bases of experience of almost any NFL executive that really you can find. I mean, look, 8 years in scouting, 3 years in cap, 2 years in football ops. He's got analytics under his belt. I mean, he's a nexus guy. He is someone who can sit in the middle and talk knowledgeably and smartly to Amy about almost anything in the operation. So what happens is Amy starts to look at Chad Brinker and go, this guy's really useful. And I need someone who can, I have a president of operation, and my president of operation, Burke Nihil, but he's business minded. Like, this is the business guy. He's going to set up the business end of this. We've got that taken care of. What I need is an individual who can come in and lend structure to the football side. I need somebody who can basically put it all in order. Analytics, cap, scouting, like, I need all these things. Football ops, they all have to work together, and I need somebody who can do that. Now, the question you can ask is, why did she choose Chad and not Ran? I can't speak to that, other than the fact that when you look at the experience between the two, the one with the far more varied resume and the one who was steeped in a number of things in a successful organization, doing, like I said, that multitude of, and they were real years. I mean, 3 real years working in cap, 8 real years grinding and scouting, like all these different things. Chad brought a lot to the table. And I think ultimately that's how Chad ended up in that position. And also, I will tell you, be very careful about assuming that Chad was pitching himself to get that job. I have seen in organizations, and I can't say this is exactly what happened in Tennessee, but I have seen in organizations where owners will spend time with people in that executive suite, and next thing you will know, the next offseason, they will approach that individual and say, hey, look, I think you can do more here. I think there's a bigger role for you here. This is what I have in mind. And then it's incumbent upon that person to go, okay, like I'm now going to climb over some other people in the organization, and I have to understand how I feel about that, and am I willing to do that? I'm not saying that's exactly what happened in Tennessee, but I am just telling you, do not discount the ability of Chad Brinker to speak authoritatively on a number of different things and how that probably impacted Amy, who, again, I cannot stress this enough, is not there on a very constant, consistent basis. And also, by the way, it doesn't necessarily mean that was the wrong decision. It doesn't at all. Take that for what you will.
Okay, so I've got three for you, okay? I'm going to throw three at you.
Yeah, good.
First
all right,
of all, yeah. Okay,
give
fine.
Me a three pack, yeah.
That's all fine, but then, so why is Ran fired would be one question.
Sure, yep.
Josina Anderson has brought up on her Twitter account this week the potential here that the league could have a problem with, again, this situation where, you know, the Titans this week are putting out, we're hiring a real GM, but Chad Brinker has final say. Do you feel like there's anything there in terms of the league, the Titans possibly being penalized for that? And third, for this fake GM job, which is what I'm calling it, who's going to be interested in this job?
Okay, so first and foremost, why was Rand fired?
I mean, if it was so bad, which it has been, we can all agree the product's bad.
Right.
I understand that Chad, but Chad has been involved in everything. So how do you separate that out if you've given him more power?
I'm not yelling at you. I'm sorry. Yeah, a little bit, but it's okay. Sorry. I'm used to it. It's fine. You and I have been there before. You get excited. Okay, so if you're sitting there and you're going, what's the future? I think the way that you have to focus what happened with Ran is sort of, okay, what's the future under Chad? What does Amy want? What does Chad, how is Chad able to facilitate that? I think what the Titans are headed toward, and you can argue whether this is quote-unquote real or not, and there are other organizations that I think are trending in this direction, is a splicing of how the general manager position is handled. And what I mean by that is, teams are starting to look at models, and Detroit has done this very effectively, where they go, okay, the quote-unquote full-service GM is one who grinds on cap, he's one who grinds on analytics, he's the one who grinds on, scouting, personnel, trades, like football ops, everything, right? I think some organizations are trending away from that. I think Detroit's got something to do with that because Brad Holmes' primary focus in Detroit is scouting czar. Like, you go out, you identify the players, both pro and college, who you believe most, like, best facilitate what the coaching staff needs, what they want. Like, the biggest, you're sitting there and if you're looking at Brad Holmes and you're saying, your job is to work at your highest level with Dan Campbell and the coordinators and knowing what fits the culture and going and getting those guys. And the way you do that also is obviously overseeing, pro and college scouting. And that is your sole focus. You don't worry about cap. Don't worry about, you can worry about analytics in terms of how that ties into, you know, going and getting and evaluating players. That's fine. We'll deal with cap. We'll deal with balancing out how to re-sign these guys in 3-4 years, how to balance the cap 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road. We'll deal with, you know, the football ops aspects of how to tie in all these departments. You have the biggest chunk of the operation that needs to be tied in, but we want you focused on that. That is, personally, I think that is where the Titans are trending. I think that is what's going to ultimately happen, where you will see who Chad Brinker hires, who Amy hires for that general manager position. But I think, you know, it's going to be it's very much leaning into, like, who's Chad Brinker working with. I think the two things I would look for is, number one, I think it's going to be somebody Chad trusts and has a relationship with, because that's important in that building. It's shown in the past. You do not want someone who comes in loyal to Amy first. I'm sorry, but it's a reality. Like, you have to be worried about that. If you bring in somebody that's loyal to Amy first, they're going to end up taking your job, being put above you, or there's going to create some kind of a schism in the organization down the line once problems really start to happen. Number two, so they got to be loyal to, it's got to be somebody that Chad trusts and is going to be loyal to Chad and what that vision ultimately is going to be. And then number two, and I think this is equal parts, I think it's going to be a scouting czar. I think it's going to be someone who is very, very driven into scouting, grinding hard on finding who the coaching staff needs, like what fits the culture, both pro and college, and then having a very, very strong bond, a tight bond with the scouting department. And in that vein, and I want to be real careful here, but I will bring this up because it did happen. Early on when Rand got the job, there were scouts who were in their last year of their deals under Rand. And Rand started to take care of different things in the organization, and then there were guys in the scouting department who were like, hey, what's going on with us? Like, we don't know what our future is. We're coming into the last year of our deals. Are we going to be around? Like, we're up? Like, what's the deal? Are we done here? Like, and eventually it got resolved, but I think they were surprised how like, it felt like, for some people in the scouting ranks, it felt like an afterthought, and that alarmed them. They're like, are we really this closely tied together as a person in a scouting department when we now have a general manager and he's basically getting to us in a way where we feel like we're – and I don't want to kill Rand for that either, by the way, because when you walk in the door, there's a million different things to do. And Rand was definitely tasked with a lot of things operationally. And when you haven't done that for any general manager who becomes a general manager for the first time, it can be overwhelming. And so some things get prioritized and you don't realize how other people are now staring at you going, okay, like, what's the deal with us? Like, what are we taking care of here? And again, it did get taken care of, but I think it was a little nerve wracking early on. That's not something that the next general manager comes in. You are going to be expected to first and foremost be thinking about your area scouts, your over the top scout, your all, like, literally every layer. That's your baby. And that's what you need to worry about. Not the cap, not, you know, how is analytics now functioning, this new thing we're bringing into the organization, how are we going to use that? And that's Brinker's job. That's what he does. He ties everything else together. So that, to me, is, I think the search for that person is part of why, Rand is out of a job today, because clearly either Amy feels like there's a better choice for it. Chad feels like there's a better choice for it. Plus, there were a number of moves. And yes, I do agree with you. I do think Chad, you know, impacted some of these moves as well that did not work out well. and there's a resetting of the table. And it's like, it's not like there's no track record to work on. So there's that aspect of it. The Josina thing, and like, will it be a real GM job? And I don't know, man, you're getting into a lot of gray area there. Like, I don't know, like, explain to me what a real GM job is, because if you come in, is like, I'll ask you, Joe, is Brad Holmes a real general manager? Detroit sure as hell thinks he is. Is he a real general manager? Even though he doesn't do the, hey, I'm the octopus with my eight arms on eight different parts of the organization, or.
Well, final say is probably the thing, right? But I understand, like, some organizations, that's the coach.
Okay, proof final say. I'm sorry, well, but that's a crock.
Yeah.
That's a total crock. You know, we can run around out here. You and I are going to have final say. We're going to be the two old men and the two old Muppets sitting up in the gallery complaining to each other about who had final say over what. Prove it. Prove it. It's the least provable thing in any organization. Who had final say? Guess who has the final say? Owner. The owner has the final say, because the owner can stop any move that happens at any point they choose. So what are you going to say? Chad Brinker's got the final say? You going to say Amy didn't have the final say?
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, but it is interesting, I mean, when you think about in terms of the rules that are dictate the hiring of these jobs, right? I guess it's an interesting question.
Again, prove it. When's the last time, okay, tell me, when's the last time any NFL team got whacked concerning a general manager having or not having final say? It's never happened.
There's always a first, Charles.
It's never happened. No, I mean, I get it. I understand the complaint here, but what are you going to tell me? Are you going to tell me Brad Holmes has final say in Detroit? You don't think anyone else weighs in on that process, and that it ultimately comes down to, you think if Dan Campbell says to Brad Holmes, Brad says, hey, I want to bring in this guy, and Dan says, yeah, doesn't fit our culture, you know, isn't the right, like, first.
No, but that's a coach, but that's a coach and a GM, but we're talking about a different job title. You know what I mean? So I hear what you're saying, but that's a coach and a GM. So I think that dynamic can go however it goes, right?
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see if the league ever decides, okay, you've got basically someone who's a layer above. Okay, I mean, why is Ryan Poles, what's going on in Chicago? Where's that case? You telling me that Kevin Warren, when he sits up there as the team president, says, we're not firing Ryan Poles, we're the greatest, we're the best job, we're this, we're that, this is what we're going to get, that's what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. Okay, where was the – why didn't they get whacked? You telling me that Kevin Warren wasn't sitting up there effectively, you know, blasting out to everyone that I'm the final say guy? That's what it looked like to me. He clearly was a layer above Ryan Poles. You tell me Ryan Poles has final say when Kevin Warren's sitting there saying, we're not firing Ryan Poles, we're going to keep Ryan Poles, and we have the best job, and here's why, and here's all the different things that lay out on the table – and then you're going to tell me, yeah, man, Ryan Poles is walking into Kevin Warren's office and he's saying, here's how this is going to go. I'm calling the shot here. I mean, nothing happened there. Okay.
All right, you talked me into it or out of it or
okay.
Whatever.
So number three. What was number three?
Well, I mean, just the
third question.
Who would want this job? Yeah. I mean, that's.
Oh, okay. Okay. Great question. That's a great question.
Thank you.
And it's a very valid, question because it, this is not a good look, and we keep talking about how this is not a good look, where you have Mike Vrabel coming out of there and being like, Amy was in my corner until she wasn't. And then when she wasn't, that was it. She was in Rand's corner at that point, right? Oh, collaborative process. Rand's going to tie everything together. He's better at managing down and managing up and all this stuff. So Vrabel's out, right? Then it's like, okay, well, Rand's the guy now. Like, he manages up, he manages down. It's the collaborative process. He's the one that now is kind of the centerpiece of this. And then the next thing you know, a year later, the guy that came in with Rand is now suddenly Rand's boss. He's suddenly the layer above Rand. He's the guy closest to Amy, right? And then, you know, the next thing you know, it's like, well, like, now Rand's out. Who do they want? Well, they want someone who's, you know, going to lean into – what Chad's position is and how all these things are going to tie together. I think it's got to be, I personally would be stunned. I would be stunned if it is a person that Chad Brinker does not have a prior relationship with. And that's really interesting because I can tell you this, all those years of Brinker's varied experience, all those different things he did working for Russ Ball in the in the Packers organization, being on the analytics side, he knows a lot of people in the NFL. Like, there's, you know, I know people, like, I've heard, you know, Mike Borgonzi with the Kansas City Chiefs, which, by the way, is an interesting name. Years ago, I went into the Chiefs organization when John Dorsey was the GM. And it was always when you walked in there, like, even Andy Reid, it was like, we have a GM four-pack. And it was when they had John Dorsey, Chris Ballard was Dorsey's right-hand man, and then it was Brett Veach and Mike Borgonzi. And it was like, all these guys are going to be GMs. You know, or these next three guys, Ballard, Veach, and Borgonzi. Just wait, it's going to happen. But he, you know, he's got a relationship with Borgonzi, and that's through working these varied, you know, positions through all these years with the Packers for a really long time. You end up with counterparts in other organizations over long periods of time. It's Ian Cunningham with the Bears. That's the reason why, you know, people are sitting there going, well, what's the tie between him and Ian Cunningham? Like, they sit there and they stare and they're like, where do these guys overlap? Like, how does this occur? It's his experience working through cap things, analytic things, working through trades, working through personnel, being on the road, grinding as a scout, like all this different stuff. He has collected a lot of relationships. He is, I'm not going to sit here and pick sides or say this guy's that, or he is very much respected. He's got a ton of relationships, and it's that varied level of experience that have kind of created this situation the way that it is right now with the Titans. And he might work out great. It might be a total mess and a crash and burn. But the last thing I think I will see is some general manager come in there who has no real tie to him and be like, huh, that makes a lot of sense. That to me would be alarming, because that would suggest something else is going on in the organization beyond. I would think that's Amy making a decision. That's Amy meeting with some candidates or taking the counsel of someone outside of the organization, and then all of a sudden starting to lean into a candidate that is not necessarily aligned with this, what I believe is ultimately going to be basically a scouting czar.
So, Charles, on the Mike Vrabel front, how do you think, you know, with all the mess that's gone on with the Titans here in the aftermath of his firing,
yeah,
and even before that,
yeah,
how do you think that influences the way that he's viewed around the league coming out of all this? And is this ultimately going to be as simple as him ending up with the New England Patriots in your mind?
Well, first things first, I want to rectify some things that have been said in the past on your station about where was all this interest in Mike Vrabel? Mike Vrabel wasn't going to be, I thought I heard Mike Vrabel was going to be this prime candidate as soon as he was let go by the Titans. And, you know, that never happened. And I'm not going to say who said that. I will let you guys fill in the blanks. But I think it worked out. I think the read on Mike Vrabel being a strong candidate for a number of organizations ultimately happened. And by the way, he was going to be the coach of the Chargers if Jim Harbaugh did not take that job. He was going to be the Chargers coach. That was their next choice. Mike Vrabel was going to be the Chargers guy. And this, to me, what's happening now in this rotation, it speaks to what we said after Mike Vrabel was fired. My read on it was, he is valued. He's definitely valued as someone who can come in, put a structure in place. He can hire good offensive coordinators when it's got to happen. He can get a lot out of players who aren't necessarily meeting, their full potential. I think you could go back and draw a line to a number of guys during Mike's regime where they squeezed every drop of juice out of guys that they possibly could. I think when you look at the Titans' experience, it's very heavily going to play into how Mike handles this coaching search. His relationship with the owner is paramount. I think his top two criteria, and I don't even think it's 1-2, I think it's 1A, 1B, is he's going to go in and what's my feel with the owner? What's the connection here? Do I believe that this bond is real? It's going to exist, and it's going to weather, if it's the kind of roster that needs churn, it's going to weather that. And then number two, it's what is my relationship to the personnel department? The general manager, is this someone who can understand the culture we're building, get me the guys that fit the culture, get me the guys that fit what we're looking for on the field schematically, Those are the two things that I think he values most, and I actually think he's going to really spend some time weighing this. I know the Patriots, they move on from Gerard Mayo. I do think part of the motivation there was they thought, like, they think this cycle is going to be a one-shot cycle with Vrabel, and this is the best shot they're going to get at him. You can get into the whole what was going on with Mayo and what a mess, like, the building became over the last year. But I don't think Mike just takes that job because the Patriots are – I do think he's got that tie with ownership. I do think there's that bond. But it's a different environment now. There's, like, in terms of the fan base, in terms of the media, like, it is a ratcheted up environment right now where there is a heavy amount of criticism, and I don't know that ownership has done a great job of completely shutting that out over the last year. And I think some of that leaked into the Mayo, you know, sort of the souring of, you know, things with Mayo over the last couple of weeks of the season. So I think that's a little dangerous when Mike looks at it. Plus the Patriots are probably a 2-year roster churn. So it's like, okay, do the Crafts understand that this is going to be 2 years of, you know, really turning over this roster. And then when we get to, you know, 2027, you're going to look at it and go, geez, 85 to 90% of the players are gone from that 2024 season. So I think he weighs that out. I think the Bears, the same situation, like what's the connection to ownership? What's going on with Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles? There's some familiarity with Poles, like in the sense of systematically in the past being involved in similar things. Kansas City, you know, like Poles came up in Kansas City, like he worked with Scott Pioli, low-level scouting job, but he's very familiar with, like, kind of how the Patriots valued players and you know, the way that their scouting grades worked and all these different things, which Mike is very familiar with, and there are certain aspects of that that were carried over into the Titans when Mike took that job. So there's some overlap there. I just think that Mike's going to be very careful about the job that he takes. And the one wild card that I think that I feel is probably less likely to happen now, because I think the Cowboys are going to retain Mike McCarthy. If that job came open, I think there'd be mutual interest. I told you guys before that Dallas was high on Mike's list. I still think it would be high on Mike's list. And I think they would be very interested in Mike. I think it's interesting that the Bears wanted to talk to Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys were like, nah, not gonna do that. So it kind of makes me feel like that's a little less likely. So Mike's the bell of the ball though. It happened. So whoever thought, geez, Mike was supposed to be this big candidate. He's not a big candidate at all. They didn't know what they were talking about. Just want to say that.
There you go. Charles Robinson, our guest, joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. Charles, great stuff, man. Appreciate your perspective and your time, and we'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Take it easy.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Lots to react to there from Charles. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.